A luxury car says a lot about its driver. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Focus Group. Tim Bennett here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. Be sure to join us here each week on the Focus Group. Find us at focusgroupradio.com. You'll find all of our media house there, along with our podcast, TFG Unbuttoned. And you can also check out the network we've joined called Believe, BLEAV.com. There's a bunch of other podcasts there as well, none as good as ours.
And every time you say the Believe thing like that, I just think of the Cher song, Do You Believe?
So my opening today, John, a luxury car says a lot about its driver. Do you know where that came from?
I want to say, was it a friend of ours, a research pal?
No.
It wasn't Chris.
It's too inside baseball, but it was a back in 1992. It was the beginning of all the Subaru commercials that Wyden and Kennedy did because
We're the sucker's moon, right?
They were trying to position the brand of just saying, you know, what a car says about you. A luxury car says a lot about its driver. So for anybody like out there, that's an oldie.
It's like that Orson Welles commercial. The French have a champagne. Do you ever watch that? You know, we watch the Orson Welles Paul Masson commercial at least once a year on YouTube. The outtakes.
The French have a... You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Well, it's as iconic as Crawford lighting her cigarette off the match off the LP, right? Joan Crawford. Somebody did that the other day. I was going to try to send it to you, but they were using Madonna's Vogue, and so Vogue was playing, and so they're doing it still. It's, you know, they just put Vogue over instead of that. It's like zoop. It's like Vogue, zoop. And then it stopped.
Was it as funny?
It was, because it was just so, you know, it's so funny because of the way she's just is manic and clapping her hands and the whole deal with the match. But to have it updated with a song like Vogue was just, you know, Vogue 40 years old updated. But to have it updated with Vogue, I thought was kind of funny.
And Joan was wearing those charm bracelets that were, apparently there was a microphone on them. Remember that?
That's what you and Bob always said, that they must have mic'd her microphone. In the rocks classes were always clink, clink, clink.
Yeah, well, they did. Apparently they did mic the bracelet. That's urban legend, but who can say? Who can say?
So how was your week going thus far? All good.
I'm like a lot of our listeners who now have to take our news in small doses. So, you know, like it will be in the morning, for example, I'll watch, CBS this morning, and it gets to a certain point where I had to switch off to like TCM or, you know, anything but like a movie, because I just don't want to hear about Doge. And I know you and I don't want to be political on the show, because as you always smartly say, people get their politics from all over the place. They don't need it from us. But from a business point of view, I will say this. If I were an investor in Tesla, I don't know. I mean, you have your CEO basically in government interfering in elections or at least putting a big footprint down in England and Germany. Like, shouldn't he just be running the company? I mean, just a business thing. And you know, then I see that the Transportation Safety Board has ordered a recall of something like 362,000 Tesla vehicles for some faulty automatic driving thing, a steering wheel issue. So, you know, auto companies are really sensitive to that stuff. Recalls, safety, like, what do you want to be running? What am I saying, right?
Well, I had seen some Subaru people at an unfortunate event that we talked about. I was at a funeral, but we were talking about one of these very issues about electric cars. You know where he's making a lot of his money? He's selling EV credits to other companies to try to get their fleet, the average, you know, the CAFE down, the corporate average fuel economy down. So you can buy credits from other companies. So he's selling them.
Wait. Just for our listeners, with this is the CAFE standards?
Right. So in other words, your whole fleet of cars, so if you're General Motors or Mazda or Subaru or Volkswagen, Mercedes, whatever, you have to average a certain number in terms of fuel economy across the range. So
yep.
If you have an electric car or hybrid cars or something, it helps lower your overall fleet's impact on the environment and the government standards. So if you can't, if you're a smaller manufacturer, Subaru is a good example, Mazda is another one, smaller brands that don't have the huge amount of products or the breadth of products of some of the other ones, in order for you not to get fined from the government, you would buy credits. So BMW famously bought credits for years from other manufacturers that had more fuel-efficient vehicles. So Tesla's making a fortune by selling a lot of their fuel credits or their EV credits to places like Subaru or BMW or Mercedes or General Motors or whoever wants to buy them. So it was interesting to hear. So not only is he, you know, collecting on both ends, the government also gave him a $400 million contract for the Defense Department to buy these shit bucket trucks they have. I love it because I'm watching on social media all the people getting stuck in their Cybertrucks. Have you seen these things? Can't climb a hill, can't get out of a parking spot.
My favorites are when they hook it up to try to pull something that like an F-150 can and the back fender comes off. Yeah. So that's to me, it's somewhat concerning. And then there's this, and just to keep it in the business world, I don't know why there's this recurring theme that comes up repeatedly that government should run like a business. It's not a business. In fact, any expert will tell you government tackles the problems that businesses don't tackle and can't tackle. So to expect it to act like some corporation is beyond my comprehension. And then to start laying off all these people, and you know what's happening, right? Institutional knowledge is just walking out the door. Like, I never thought of the federal government as being, all right, we could all say it's bloated, there's too many people. But when you hear about some of the things these people do on a daily basis, and what it's either wildlife stuff or whatever, I don't know that you could just get rid of people and expect things to function. Like, I mean, Twitter was not exactly a shining spot on the hill when he came in, right? He took it from X number of employees down to a bunch of other ones. And I guess that's the way they work, right?
Right. Well, and you want government to break even, right? It's not there to make money. And I'm guilty of it. I had to learn when I was a commissioner in Rehoboth, is I was always frustrated that we didn't make decisions quickly. Because in business, you decide you're going to do something and make a decision. I remember having a discussion with the mayor, and he said, government is not, he said, I understand efficiencies and all those other things. He said, but the way our form of government is set up, not only in the city, but if you think about in the U.S., it's purposefully slow so that you don't make decisions that may have unintended consequences to hurt people, or you really think about it, or you hear from more constituents that might not have been paying attention. So it is difficult for somebody like an Elon Musk, who is a type A personality, or Donald Trump, who thinks he is.
Go, go, go. Yeah.
Right. Let's do it. Make a decision. Go next. And government, it can't really always work like that, because you have to take into account everybody, or you're supposed to make sure you don't do, or you do the least amount of harm with whatever legislation or whatever you do to bring forward. Or the most help or least harm. So it's frustrating. But as I heard, somebody had said to me, there was somebody, he was actually a New Yorker. That was at the, we were discussing at a luncheon.
One of the funerals you were at.
Funerals. And he said, we asked him if he was concerned about, he said, not in too short of time. He said, we're in a honeymoon phase.
Oh, yeah.
He said, we know where it's going to, you know, how it's going to turn out. He said, but within less than a year, he said, all the Republicans are going to start jockeying as to who wants to be the next president. He said, so then all wheels are off. He said, because then you're going to have to actually, if you want to get into, you're either going to suck up to Trump to be his heir apparent, or you're going to have to try to differentiate yourself. And he said, it's going to throw them in turmoil. That's his prediction.
And how about this? I hope the public generally sees the hypocrisy on full display. So when Democrats are in the White House, they overspend. The deficit's crazy. We got to cut, cut, cut. The debt ceiling gets capped. We shut down the government. Trump comes in and the Republicans are in lockstep and he wants to increase the debt limit $4 more trillion. And we're not talking thousands, just $4 trillion. And his proposals are going to add something like $5.6 to $7 trillion to the national debt. So where is this party of fiscal response? Mike Johnson, yeah. We're the party of fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Really? So you're giving the richest people even more money. You're taking away from, yeah. Oh, here's my favorite, Tim. You and I talk about this all the time, offline. I just saw it pop up in another article. A statistician looked at the states that put money into the federal government. Guess which ones put the most in and get the least back? It's the blue states. You told me just this past week it showed up on two other surveys. Connecticut, yeah.
Connecticut's
per taxpayer,
one.
Puts more in than they get out. And who's the worst that takes the most and puts the least? I think it was a tie between Mississippi, Louisiana, or Alabama. Does that sound
Arkansas,
about right?
Yeah. But yeah. 48, 49, 50th and everything. Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, the welfare states. They're as Trump would call them, shitholes.
Yeah.
I know we have listeners there, so I hate to offend you, but you know, these states and these senators that are down there yakking, and they're all horrible senators, quite frankly, in my opinion, don't want to give aid when there's hurricanes, don't want anything else, but they're first with their hands out. And so when the education department goes away and all these other government services go away, I don't want to hear all the crying.
Unintended that's what consequences.
We're gonna hear. Yep.
That's why when I kick this conversation off about it, it's not a business and you can't run it like some kind of shipping department where you think three people that didn't answer your question correctly get canned. It's not
to
like
show
that.
To show how far we've come, Ross Perot used to constantly pick on Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama as being a problem, or Louisiana. And
Ross Perot. Right?
Ross Perot, of all people, right? And he
would... Here I am.
Well, that's because where Bill Clinton came from, Arkansas. So he said, you know, you can't have anybody that comes from Arkansas to run anything. And he said they're 48th, 49th, 50th in every category, no matter what you look at. So he said, so, you know, but there you go. I, anyway.
We'll see where it goes.
Wait for the midterms, I guess, John, that's it. So what caught your eye this week?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
Our producer, Matt, sent this to me, and I'm so glad that he did because he knows I'm a favorite and a fan of the one and only Tim Gunn, who we had on our show. I don't know how it happened because Sirius, whenever they found out we were supposed to have like a good guest on, they would clamp down like the Pet Shop Boys, prime example, right? They would take him away. They'd say, you can't go on the focus group. But Tim Gunn came in, navy blue blazer, shirt and tie, nice jeans, brown shoes, perfectly dressed. He did Tim's list that day, remember? Mm-hmm. So the article that Matt sent me is about where the origin of the phrase make it work. Make it work. You know how he would go through the room. Okay, so first he hears it all the time. And in this interview he gave People Magazine, someone asked him about the make it work. He goes, it happened just about 2 hours ago. He mentored 16 seasons. I didn't realize it was that long. Leaving in 2018 to create a new fashion show on Amazon. Some of you might have seen called Making the Cut. Bob and I enjoyed it. It was really well done. And I just loved seeing
him. Was it the same sort of thing?
Same format, except they were in very exotic locations. But it was always I loved watching Tim Gunn interact and mentor. I think he's so good at this. So they asked him about the origin of the phrase, and he used to be he taught at the Parsons School of Design, and he said, I'll tell you the catalyst. He's 71 now, by the way. I was teaching a 2-semester-long class, 30 weeks, with the same students in their senior year. They were developing their portfolios, which had to correspond to the collection they were creating in a different class. And I had a student extremely talented who in April, and this is September, and now it's April, declared, I'm going to start all over. And so upon hearing this, Gunn looks at her and says, no, you're not. And here I'll continue. He said, I said, after all these months, you're going to abandon this. And she said, well, I think I can do it. And he said, no, I'm not going to let you do it. Whatever it is that's troubling you, I want you to sit with this portfolio. And if necessary, go get your muslin prototypes from your other class and really analyze them. Come up with a diagnosis of what's troubling you and then a prescription for how to make it work, how to move forward with this. So I'll sum up by saying that he landed on that and he does advise all his students to do this stuff. He said, because, but if you are, He said, I said to her and the rest of the class, if I just let you abandon something and move on to something else, maybe it will work, but maybe it won't. But if you really sit down and critically analyze what's happening, and as I said a moment ago, come up with a prescription for how to make it work, you have just enhanced your whole internal toolbox, your problem-solving abilities. Then he continues, life is filled with problems you're going to need to solve. If you can figure out how to deal with that and how to make things work, it just makes you so much more agile and capable of really conquering the world. He was not invited back to, you know, they're bringing it back, by the way. It looks like it's going to be premiering on Freeform, Disney Plus, and Hulu, season number 21. And they brought back Heidi Klum, but he was not asked to return. And he said he was very disappointed at first. And he said, I could sit here boohooing all day long, but I thought, why throw hubris in the face of an angry God? I had great seasons. I'm going to cheer him on. I wish I had been able to do more, but I'll still watch. So
they're going to bring back Project Runway?
For season 21, and it looks like it's going to be free. It's launched on Bravo before moving to Lifetime and then back to Bravo. We'll now see its home on Freeform, Disney Plus, and Hulu for season 21.
Yeah. I wonder who's going to do the Tim Gunn role.
My guess, I know that Heidi's back, but I guess it would be Christian Siriano, because wasn't he doing that for a while on the Reimagined show?
Yeah, and they had the
I stopped guy. Watching. I want Tim Gunn. I want Tim and Heidi.
There was a guy, what's his name, Zach? Somebody was yes. He was the head guy at Brooks Brothers or some designer.
Posen, Zach Posen.
Zach Posen. No, Tim Gunn was great. And, you know, he mentored in not a disrespectful way. He always it's what you always said. He would say, these two things are great, but we have, you know, you need to do this here or let's concentrate on this. So you never were deflated. He never said, oh, this is horrible. Start again. He always was, always found something to compliment.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was like, what's that compliment sandwich? Compliment me, tell me what's wrong and compliment me again and I'll probably fix it.
Yeah. My story can't be any vastly different.
I'll say from the headline.
Right, and it took place in a suburb outside of Philadelphia, in a little town called Glen Olden, which is in Delaware County, I believe. So this optician has been charged with soliciting customers for sex. So apparently, this guy's name is Brian Steiner. He's 40 years old, and he's been charged with sexual assault, threat of rape, indecent assault, false imprisonment, prostitution, stalking, theft, and harassment. So what was happening is people would come in. He worked in this eyeglass place, optician's place. And people would come in for glasses, and he would start flirting with them. And depending upon what they were looking at, he would say, you know, if you give me sex, I'll waive the copay. Or I'll...
I can't believe this goes on for glasses. Damn,
or I'll get you glasses. So in a couple of instances, women had come in and... he would ask them to, you know, they would look at the glasses and then he'd say, I need to have an exam. And the women would say he would lock the doors to the facility and then take them back to an exam room where there were no cameras and then strip down nude and say he wanted oral sex or they were going to have sex or whatever. And then they'd get their glasses for free or their contacts or whatever. So apparently 15, as many as 30, but at least 15 people got their glasses.
Wait, the article said is at least 15.
As many as 30.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they said he would be very flirty. People were reporting him to the owners of the business, but they could never figure it out until one woman was able to properly describe his tattoos and clean-shaven body. So the police then started checking into this or whatever. And then he had moved on to men.
Oh.
So I guess he was done with the female customers. He moved on to men. Somebody was looking for a pair of Christian Dior glasses, they said. And he had said, well, if you let me perform oral sex on you, I'll give them to you, you know, for free instead of the $500. And the guy showed them to the cops. Here they are. So apparently he took part. There's no complaints. He got his glasses.
Like my frames.
Right. Well, so when they questioned the employee, the Steiner about, he says, oh, those were old glasses. They were used. He thought they were new. I just put it a different lens and made them gold frames. Yeah. So the guy said he didn't even really get what he wanted. So they're trying to figure out how to. So they've charged him with all these, as they saw this slew of charges. But He says, I gave them all old pairs of modern glasses. These were not new glasses I was giving away, was his defense. So, so he had men and women. His bail was set at 10% of the charge. So he's out on bail for $250,000. And there'll be a preliminary hearing later in the month. What would you do? Somebody says to you, hey, you want free glasses? Take in the back. Not a bad looking guy. Not that that matters.
You know, how much do eyeglasses cost these days?
Well, you know, I looked at a pair. They could be, depending on your frames, some of them with a good prescription could be $500, $600, $700. If you
That's
buy something
okay.
expensive, you can go to Eyeglasses of America or whatever for $99, a little different. But where else can you go and get a blowjob and free glasses? I mean, that's the thing.
You didn't get one. You give one and then
get one or give one. No, he would also give one. So for the men, he wanted to perform.
Oh.
There was a particularly, yes, the one who got the gold glasses, he apparently contacted this guy a couple of times. That's where the police kicked on, and he was black. And they said Steiner was particularly interested in him because he wanted to see if black men were really as well hung as his rumor had it. And that's where he got the gold frame
glasses.
Citizen
scientist at work. A citizen scientist.
Now, can you imagine? What I laughed about the stories that went on and on, and I thought the reporter obviously
had fun.
No, this is right. This is one of these where, yeah. So, anyway,
okay,
they're closed down. So you have to find a new place. If you're in the Glen Olden area, look for a new place for glasses.
There may be a few people who are heartbroken because they wanted those.
One of the victims said that after she was done and got her glasses, he called back and told her to come back for a refitting.
Tim, that's one of the best parts of the article, right? First, I think the guy that thought he got new frames, but he got a used pair. Okay.
Used pair and a blowjob.
Now you know that there is something going on at that glass story. You have 20/20, but if you come in here, I'll give you 20.
Yeah. So there.
Good one. I love how caught our eye always just, it's such a like a ping pong game. It goes from serious to, and it's just because of what you and I see in our different news feeds. All right, folks, we're going to take a really quick break here. When we return, we have a business birthday for you. Of course, that's a signature piece of the Focus Group. And we have a shop talk about what your car in the driveway says about you, and specifically about your financial situation. So stick with us. We'll see you in a bit.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now, back to the Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Hey, welcome back to the Focus Group. Tim Bennett here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. Be sure to check out all of our programming and all of our media at focusgroupradio.com. Please like and follow us. Apparently, that's important.
Tim,
right, John?
I know. Yeah.
Got it. You know, we're going to do it now. Maybe we'll ask our listeners what they think. But John and I are thinking of doing some modification later on of our business birthday on the TikTok and wondering if we can do something there. We're going to experiment with it and see. I wonder, you think it would work on the TikTok?
Might. Apparently, there's no failing because there's people dancing, dogs doing, like,
yeah.
So you and I doing a business birthday on TikTok seems pretty normal to me, actually.
Yeah. So we'll have to figure that out. So without further ado, Mr. Nash, today's business birthday.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but the Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So celebrating today is John Harvey Kellogg. He was born February 26th in 1852. He died at 91 on December 14th in 1943. Before I go into him a little bit, this is one of these birthdays. We have these different sites that we call and get information from.
Is there a change in date?
No, there's no change in date on this one, but I've never seen one so long.
Oh, he was a Kellogg. Come on.
So involved. Right. Yeah. And so I'm going to try to do the best as I can.
You distilled it for us?
I did. And I also cheated a little bit by using AI to see if it would help us. But we'll see.
Well, yeah, we'll be the judge of that. But
yeah, we'll be the judge of it. You have to put it in your own words. You just can't rip and read, as he used to say, off the AP. Don't rip and read the story. You got to make it your own. So he died, I said, at 91. American businessman, inventor, physician, and advocate of the progressive movement. He was also the director before, of course, the famous name of Kellogg. He was the director of the Battle Creek Sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan, and which was founded by the members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now, as a sidebar, remember you and I talked about blue zones?
Yes.
Well, the Seventh-day Adventists are huge proponents of a vegetarian diet and eating healthy and no masturbation and all these other things. So to live this pure kind of boring life, and but it make you live long. So you'd be unhappy, but you live long. Well,
is Battle Creek?
Well, one of these blue zones is out in outside of L.A., and of course I'm going to forget the name of the town. I should know it. But anyway, they found out that there is one of these blue zones, a seven around the world, where people live to average over 100 years old. And they're saying it's because of the Seventh-day Adventists and the and what they follow, the practices that they follow. So, you know, we'll see. Occidental, is that what, was that what it would be
yes,
called?
Yes, that could be, yeah.
Yeah. So the Seventh-day, he also, at the sanitarium, combined aspects of a European spa, hydrotherapy, a hospital, and a high-class hotel. He treated the rich and famous as well as the poor who could not afford hospitals. He also, while he was doing this, he developed he wanted to find foods and protein, vegetable-based proteins that were easy to chew, whatever that means, because he said that a lot of them were hard. So yes, the development of the dry breakfast cereal was largely responsible because of his creation of the flaked cereal, or he, because of the cereal he created, he actually created the flaked cereal industry with the founding and the culmination of Kellogg's, which created Corn Flakes. So as I said, he had a big belief that clean living, vegetarianism, no, absolutely no self-pleasure were keys to a pure life. So in his quest to make food boring, I guess, he invented cornflakes, co-invented cornflakes with his brother. And some say it was the saddest breakfast cereal in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So his brother, because so he and his brother, they developed cornflakes, and his brother Will was like, I don't know about this. What if we put sugar on it? So that's how they invented Frosted Flakes. And apparently, it was also Will and another cousin who was gay. I don't know why they threw that in. They, back in the 1800s, decided to, they were the anti-cornflake by making the Frosted Flakes. So there was this faction of, he didn't like the, John Harvey didn't like the Frosted Flakes with the sugar, but the gay, the brother and the gay cousin. Actually made a ton of money on the Frosted
They're
Flakes.
They're great.
Dr. Kellogg spent his life preaching weird health trends as well. Electric baths, so there was shock therapy, I suppose. Yogurt enemas, extreme diets that they said were, you know, quite severe in terms of extreme diets and enemas and cleansings. He also was a pioneer in gut health. And he would also produce, they said, a number of other pseudoscience sort of theories, but did get his name and was part of the conglomerate known as Kellogg's and Kellogg Breakfast Cereals. He died December 14th. He was buried in Oak Hill in Battle Creek. He left his entire estate to the Race Betterment Foundation.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And, which they had run out of money soon. But it goes on for pages and pages and pages of the craziness. Lots of inventions around food proteins and gut health. They said a lot of it reminded me of Kennedy, you know, the new
RFK.
Yeah. A lot of it, they just said, was pseudoscience and didn't make a lot of sense. But there were some things they thought maybe might have some merit. They said, for instance, there were several popular misconceptions that he would falsely attribute various cultural practices about the makings of Kellogg's. For instance, he said, you know, why they made the Kellogg cereal. They said one of the false claims was Kellogg's cornflakes were invented or marketed to prevent masturbation. But they said they got it wrong. It was to promote indigestion.
Surprise, surprise, right?
And then it goes on through a whole bunch of other things about circumcision with babies. And, you know, he really went down the rabbit hole, this guy, in terms of weird health trends. And so, but anyway, cornflakes and then his brother and gay cousin put sugar on them and do Frosted Flakes, which
frosted
far more popular than the corn.
Are we surprised? It's a touch of sugar, right?
So happy birthday, John Harvey Kellogg.
Good one. Very good one.
I don't know.
Tim, he's known for a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And so whether or not, let's say 50% of what he did and came up with was crackpot science and the other 50 was actually good, that's probably still better than most, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He rather would not have the crackpot stuff, though.
Yeah. No, they had all kinds of other things, printers, and they gives you boxes. So when you think about developing the cereal, right, what it all would go around it. And but I wonder about, you know, these are the sort of things, I wonder if they do, maybe I just don't know, but I wonder if they do biographical, you know, movies about a lot of these people. You know, they do things about the Civil War or different wars or historical events. I wonder if they do about people like this.
So there was the founder about Ray Kroc who started,
McDonald's.
And they've done, Jeff Bridges was in a movie called Tucker about the famous automobile Tucker, right? Yep. That didn't last forever. Obviously we had Howard Hughes, but I agree with you. Some of these business ones are kind of fascinating stories in and of themselves, right?
Right. Yeah. It was like the first African-American pilot, that Bessie Coleman we talked about, and all she did would be a pretty cool, I don't know, I would like it, pretty cool biography.
Same here.
Yeah. Documentary. So anyway, happy birthday to John Kellogg, John. We have, as John mentioned before the break, we've got a quick shop talk. And I found this in Fortune magazine. And it was from a personal finance guru. And he's also a radio host. But he had talked about, his name's Dave Ramsey. And he said that he can 100% tell you who will stay middle class by looking at the cars in their driveway. He said, the way you know someone is going to stay middle class is when they have two very nice cars that are obviously $500, $600, $700 payments sitting in the front of their middle class house, Dave Ramsey, personal finance expert, says. 100% these people are going to stay in the middle class until they can break this habit. It's a huge indicator. And so his whole premise here is that based upon the cars he sees in the driveway, he could certainly tell where somebody's economic status would be or not be. And I was thinking about myself and friends and people's cars and what they drive and how they behave. And I don't know if I totally, do you totally agree with this?
That there's a lot that he said in this article that I agree with in principle. But at the same time, there's stuff that didn't make a lot of sense. Like, so he was suggesting, and by the way, this notion of middle class, like, you know, there's a whole body of research where if you asked people if they felt they were middle class, they might barely be middle class. But in actuality, when you looked at their salaries and the household income, they were actually upper middle to almost considered, you know, well off. So, and Tim, you and I know people in the business world. We have a friend who has his two or three leases going at once and is probably spending $1,000 or more, like maybe $1,500 a month just in car leases, right?
For each car.
So, and I always go by Tim's sort of rule of thumb, which is years ago, we began leasing our vehicles. And I actually like leasing because, you know, something after 3 years, the car is going to start needing service, trade it in, get a new one. And it's almost like you're, when you buy a car and you keep it longer than the 3, 4, 5 years, you are accumulating more expenses. Yeah, it's going on, you're doing your thing, but so I just kind of build into my life that I'm going to have a car payment. So if you have that in your mind, you're like, oh, I'm going to always have a car payment. It should be the lowest it could possibly be. And that's what Tim said to me one day. He goes, you know, if you're going to have this car, if it's a car loan or a lease, what's the lowest it can be? I look at these numbers that Dave Ramsey put up in his article, $500, $600, $700, $800 leases. This is way more than you and I ever paid for a lease, right?
Right. But 500 now is not.
It's common.
It's more the norm. And 700, 800.
For a normal car.
I think so. I think it's a lot of money. I think it's outrageous. What he is saying is that you should either buy used, which you and I have always said certified pre-owned makes sense if you wanted to buy something. Or
if you could find the vehicle, because now used car sales are constrained, right?
Yep. Or he said, unless you have a net worth of more than $1 million, he wouldn't advocate you going out to just buying new cars that are more luxury foreign car, your Mercedes or BMW or something, Land Rovers. Again, I guess you could go get a certified pre-owned Mercedes or Porsche or something like that and be okay. But his whole point again on this was that these people were going to be saddled with this debt if they wanted to keep this, and why not have that money do something else for you? Unless you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire, that he thinks it's a bad investment, which my takeaway for this is that buying a new car is a bad investment overall. And that's where we talked about leasing, or that's where you would talk about certified pre-owned. I don't disagree with that. They always say you drive a car off the lot, a new car, it's worth 50% of the value as soon as you drive it off
the
lot.
The minute you drive it off, the rubber hits the road, yeah.
So I get that. So I thought this was another way of just simply saying, I suppose, to be more financially secure or smart and not dump a lot of money in an asset that's not really going to return, not give you the return for your investment.
There is an aspect of this that does also play into it, which there are some people who will only buy certain brands of cars based on safety.
Yeah.
And you may insist on having a Volvo. You may insist on having like any car that might have done really well in safety testing. And you may be paying for those additional features or that blanket of security. Again, that may not be any indicator to what your family's worth or how you think of money. It just may you may think to yourself, I'm going to spend on, because if I'm in an accident, I want to walk away from it. That's a different thing entirely, right?
Yeah, you know, it's. I think it's changed in terms of a car says, and that was the whole luxury yeah. car says a lot about its owner, is a lot of people self-identify or in terms of what kind of house you live, what kind of neighborhood yeah. you live, what kind of clothes you wear, what kind of car you drive, as to their station in life or how people see them or view them. I always remember growing up, and of course you and I were in rural Connecticut, but the wealthiest people had the junkiest cars.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
you're so true.
You yeah. remember the people that lived at that huge mm-hmm. farm in town that had, you know, celebrities at their farm all the time. But she had an old junky pickup truck with a door hanging off of it.
Yeah.
And she drove that to the market. And, you know, here's this woman that was, you know, very, very wealthy. And that used to always be the thing. I even remember kids in college. It was the same sort of thing. They would bring an old junky car. Whereas some kids would bring these new shiny cars to school. The kids that actually came from families that you knew were pretty well off had the old hand-me-down Delta 88 with, you know, rust in the
excellent in the choice, back. By the way, for you, for an old car, right?
But you know what? I was wondering about this. Is that how much we've changed in terms of, we all have friends that have cars that I certainly wouldn't spend that much money on. I don't fault them for it, but I certainly wouldn't spend as much money on them as some of my friends do. I don't know if you feel the same.
I like value. And to pick up on what you were saying a minute ago, there's a famous, well, at least in my world, in New York City, I used to always hear this. In New York, in the city, it's how you dress, how you choose to present yourself. And this goes back to the go-go 80s and 90s with suits, the shoulder pads. It's how you dress. In Los Angeles, it's what you drive. So if it's what you were saying about projecting a personal taste or a personal style, like in the city, New York City, it's how you dress. Out in LA, it's what you're driving, because that's what you're in all the time. And that's a statement that people would make a statement with the cars they would be driving, right?
Yeah, there was some recent young Hollywood star, I don't know who he is, but everybody's making a big uproar that he's driving and he's had a couple of, I guess, successful runs on some series. But he's still driving an old Toyota pickup that he's had forever and pulls up to the restaurants or the valets. And I guess it's driving Hollywood crazy because this is what he drives. He hasn't gone out and gotten the new shiny whatever.
Almost sounds like Harrison Ford or something.
Yeah.
Right. So. Like you just want a star that's just like, you know, the pickup works fine. And out there, they last forever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So when you and I hit it in Hollywood, John, we'll head out there in our old Orange Vega.
No, that's your Orange Vega. I never had a car. I always was the lucky one to have you pick me up, and it was the Scirocco. Well, it was Vega first.
What was the one
second.
You crashed that your dad had? What
Pontiac. Car? It was a big Pontiac. Old boat. Stacy Cassandra's in the back with Marianne. They're laughing. I'm pulling out, and I went right up onto a boulder. And
the
one headlight shining up. And Stacy gets out, and she's like, everything's fine. Everything's fine. I'm like, really? I pull up. And that was the one night my parents were up to like 1 a.m. with some Entenmann's coffee cake. And then my dad insisted that I had to have the metal shop at school fix it. Could you imagine?
Which is even funnier, right?
No,
which is even funnier. Take this into the shop class. Let them fix it.
I remember I inquired kind of, and it just got a blank stare. Like, you know, you're going to have that shop fix that car. I'm like, okay.
You must know someone in shop.
I think I said something about that car to either my sister or my mom recently. They just absentmindedly said, oh, he loved that car. I'm like, no, he didn't. That thing, I remember I used to put like $1.60. Remember when gas was?
Yeah, 23 cents a gallon.
Minimal stuff in to get it to go. It was a gas hog. That car was horrible.
I think there was a party down at Mitchell's Farm off of way down off River Road or something. And I didn't, for some reason, I wasn't part. Otherwise, I'd have been in the back seat probably with Stacy and Marianne or something, or front seat driving with you.
Yeah, this is around.
For some reason, I didn't go to that party.
No, and this was around, this is the week of graduation parties. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Not that we were drinking.
At that party, I did not, actually. Yeah. I remember hanging out with Justine. Remember Justine Rakich?
Yeah, there was always a little bonfire, and kids would, you know, take a sip.
Hang out.
Yeah.
Just hanging out. I remember having water, actually. And, you know, back then, beer and stuff just didn't taste.
Somebody would bring schnapps or brandy or something.
That was the first time I ever got buzzed, was on peppermint schnapps.
Oof.
Now that
just
I
like
think
drinking.
About it.
Yeah, just like drink.
Yeah.
Like drinking mouthwash something.
Yes, Tim, very much so. And enjoying it. Like, oh, this mouthwash tastes great.
Lavoris.
All right, friends. We're gonna call it a show right there for you. Want to thank you for joining us here on the Focus Group. Focusgroupradio.com is our website, and you can go there and learn about us, our partner Deep Discount. And you get there by going to the site, as I said, and click on the Deep Discount logo and start a shopping experience. It's movies, TV shows, games, books, audio CDs. It's a ton of stuff, toys, etc. And we always say here on the Focus Group, Tim started this, and I think it's a good one. Don't text and drive. We want you to arrive alive. It means a lot to us. So have a good one.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.